möchte euch herzlich begrüßen im Namen von KPÖ, Europäische Linke, Transform Europe. Jedenfalls herzlich willkommen hier in der Drechslergasse im zentralen Ort der österreichischen Kommunisten und Kommunistinnen. Vorneweg eine technische Anmerkung. Die Luciana wird in Englisch sprechen. Sie versteht zwar ausgezeichnet Deutsch, aber es ist leichter für sie, differenzierte Überlegungen in Englisch auszusprechen. Und wir haben eine frühste Übersetzung organisiert. Also diejenigen Genossen und Genossinnen, die sich wohler fühlen, wenn sie englische Übersetzung, den englischen Text auf Deutsch übersetzt hören, sollen sie da hinten im Eck beim Martin sammeln, sich nicht stigmatisiert fühlen, sondern das als ein Service der KPÖ wahrnehmen. Luciana Castellina in Wien zu begrüßen, ist wirklich ein großes Vergnügen und auch eine Ehre. Luciana ist eine der Ikonen der kommunistischen, sozialistischen und linken Bewegung Italiens und weltweit. Um einige der Stationen dieser wirklich ganz, ganz außerordentlichen Biografie zu nennen: Sie ist der Kommunistischen Partei Italiens 1947 beigetreten, war in den verschiedensten Publikationsorganen tätig, in L'Unità, in Il Manifesto, in Liberazione, und wie sich für jeden guten Kommunisten und jede gute Kommunistin gehört, ist sie zumindest einmal aus der Kommunistischen Partei ausgeschlossen worden, nämlich 1969, als sie zusammen mit Lucio Magri, Aldo Natoli, Palato und Lucio Pinto und Rosana Rosanda die Zeitung Il Manifesto gründete. Sie wurde Mitglied der Partei Democrazia Proletaria. 1984, nach dem Scheitern des historischen Kompromisses und der strategischen Wende von Enrico Berlinguer, vereinigte sich die Partei, der Luciana angehörte, von Neuem mit der Kommunistischen Partei Italiens, und der KPI diente Luciana dann in den verschiedensten herausgehobenen Positionen im Parlament, im Europaparlament, bis 1984, als die, bis 1992, als die Kommunistische Partei Italiens sich auflöste und in die Demokratische Partei der Linken umbenannte. Da schloss sich Luciana Castellina dann Rifondazione Comunista an. In Rifondazione Comunista kam es auch zu mehreren Differenzierungen, und heute gehört Luciana der Partei Sinistra Italiana an. Das ist eine von zwei Parteien, zwei größeren Parteien, die aus Rifondazione Comunista hervorgegangen sind. Luciana ist, ich glaube, Ehrenpräsidentin, Honorary President of ARCI. Das ist eine große, populäre Massenorganisation, eine der großen kulturellen Errungenschaften der Linken Italiens. Sie ist auch im marxistisch-christlichen Dialog aktiv. Sie schreibt im Manifesto, sie schreibt wunderbare Bücher. Ich glaube, zuletzt erschienen Amori Comunisti. Sie ist nach wie vor sozusagen eine Fahne des Kommunismus in Italien, der sehr viele Metamorphosen durchgemacht hat und auch sehr schwierige und kritische Perioden erlebt hat. Ich möchte Luciana bitten, zu drei Fragen einleitend zu uns zu sprechen. Nämlich erstens, ich glaube, es wäre schön für uns österreichische Genossen und Genossinnen, zu erfahren, wie du eigentlich in die kommunistische Bewegung gekommen bist. Das ist kein uninteressanter und auch kein einfacher Weg gewesen, ist eine schöne und interessante Episode der italienischen Zeitgeschichte. Das Zweite, ich glaube, das ist für uns österreichische Genossen und Genossinnen besonders interessant, ist die Frage, was ist eigentlich die Spezifik des italienischen Kommunismus? Was macht diese Besonderheit aus einer kommunistischen Massenpartei, deren Wählerinnenschaft und deren Mitgliedschaft nicht nach Hunderttausenden, sondern nach Millionen zu zählen war und die dann doch, also in einem ganz bestimmten historischen Moment, einen Niedergang erlebte und ich würde sagen eine katastrophale Implosion erlebt hat. Und schließlich, und das ist glaube ich auch aus der heutigen politischen Situation, jetzt 5 Monate vor den Europaparlamentswahlen mit einer großen Bedeutung für die politische Landschaft in Europa ein relevantes Thema, wie steht es um die italienische Linke heute? Soweit meine Fragen. Luciana wird, ich glaube, 25, 30 Minuten sprechen. Wenn es dann Fragen gibt, seid ihr eingeladen, diese Fragen zu stellen. Und ich möchte, dass wir um 21 Uhr den Abend beenden. Wenn ihr mit dem Vorgang einverstanden seid, es bleibt eh nichts anderes über, dann gebe ich jetzt Luciana das Wort.
Danke sehr. Ja, es tut mir leid, ich kann nicht Deutsch sprechen, weil ich spreche, wie ihr könnt sehen, aber ich kenne nur 200 Wörter der Kinder und es ist zu kompliziert, mit der Sprache der Kinder zu erzählen, was die Geschichte der italienischen Partei ist, weil es ist auch eine ganz besondere Geschichte. So I go to English. So the first thing you told me, you would ask me then, you didn't ask me again, is how I did arrive to the Italian Communist Party. And the reason why I arrived at the Communist Party when I was very young had something to do with Österreich, because my grandfather was from Trieste, and he was a great friend of Oberdan, and Oberdan, as you know, was the one who was representing the great movement in favor of joining Italy. Trieste should join Italy, should, and so on. And they left Trieste in secret with my grandfather, both, and they were great friends, and they arrived. And then in Italy, for a long time, they were organizing together as a pressure on the Italian government to take a position against Austria, because at the time there was a Triplice Alliance, and Italy was part of those who was allied with Austria. And well, they when they decided that they should kill the emperor of Austria, who was visiting Trieste, they were playing cards to see who should go and kill him. And so the choice went to a guy who at the last moment was afraid, so Oberdan said, I will go. And just to tell you how close they have been, then I finally found a book of an historian in England about the real story of Oberdan, and I found a lot of things of my grandfather, quite crazy, by the way, anyway. And so what happened in 1945, Italy, the war in Italy stops the 25th of April, but already on the 4th of May, there was a big demonstration for Trieste to Italy. You know that the Italy, Trieste was liberated later because the Allied were on one side and Tito's military army was on the other side, and they couldn't decide who was getting into the town first because it would have important consequences in terms of the occupation. And in this time, they immediately organized a demonstration, a students' demonstration with a strike, all the students of the town. on strike in order to support the idea of Trieste Italiana. And of course, because of my grandfather, I joined immediately the demonstration, and we arrived in a big square in Roma, in the center, and the town and the square was already full of people. And I said to my comrade near me, look how good the demonstration, what a great result, the square is already full. The square was full of communist workers, and as soon as we arrived, they were beating us in a very harsh way, because we didn't know that the demonstration had been organized by the fascists, who were, you know, Rome had been liberated 1 year before, and the fascists had time to reorganize, and it was a group who was armed, led by a certain captain, Pinna Bianca, and they assaulted the direction of the party, of the Communist Party. Was not far away from the square with weapons. So there was a lot of trouble, and we were beating and so on. And after a couple of hours of great fights, somebody came out of the headquarters of the Communist Party, and there was somebody from Trieste, and made a speech, just, you know, immediately. And he spoke about the Slovenians, and he told something, and he didn't know what the Italian fascists had done to the Slovenian people, which was perhaps the first pulizia etnica, ethnic cleaning, which has been made. We have kicked them out, they taken their land, and I mean, a real horrible story. And I had no idea of that story, so I was listening, and I realized that in my family, the Slovenian were called Schavi, which means slaves. And I was quite horrified. And so I said, my God, perhaps they are right. And, so the next day I went to look for the communist in my school, and this, so the beginning of the story is that I was bitten by the Communist Conference as first act of our relation, you know. And, but I'm very happy that it happened. Anyway, yes, well, it's peculiar. I just want to tell you two things to understand the Italian Communist Party. We had fascism for 20 years, not 10, like the Nazi. 20 is a lot. And so the Italian communists have been in exile or in prison for a very, very long time. And they can arrive in Italy, back in Italy free only in 1944, when the Allied troops arrive in Salerno, which is a town just south of Naples. And Togliatti arrived directly from Moscow, where he had been. In the meantime, he had been in Spain, because lots of Italians were in Spain during the war, the Spanish War. And many had been in prison. And Togliatti arrived, and he made two very courageous choices, which I think that they had a great influence in the subsequent history of the Communist Party. First of all, he decided that there were not condition whatsoever to make a revolution. Can you imagine in the relation of forces which existed with the army, American army, occupying and Yalta and all that. And he had understood that the first thing which had to be done was a very serious process of democratization, which was not so easy, because in the North, the communist tradition, the left-wing tradition, which didn't last very much, you know, because the Communist Party was born in 21, and fascism arrived in 22, so immediately. In the North, there was a socialist tradition, or in the working class. But in the South, politics was that the peasants were burning the municipalities, you know, and it was more or less an anarchist movement and that sort. So that the point that was to make a real democratization of the country. And I think this was a fundamental choice, because democracy was because Italy never had a democracy. We didn't have the Weimar Republic in our history or something like that. And what did it mean, this? Although to make a constitution, he understood that there was no reason to make a battle against the church or the battle to kick out the king, and that these were minor issues, and so he concentrated the fight, the struggle, about the new constitution. An Italian constitution is one of the most advanced because it touches private property, you know, in a deep way. And when Europe was going to be made in 57, the Minister of Economy of Germany didn't want Italy in the European Committee because of the constitution, because it was too socialist, as he said. And but of course, as the Christian Democrats told him, don't worry, we won't abide, we can be sure, it doesn't matter so much, you know. And so they went on. So that is one side, and this was made. And you know, what is very quite important, that in 1 year, there were a lot of people who became members of the Communist Party. Longo, who was the vice secretary of the party, was sent to see who were all these members who had arrived, you know. And he came back and said, my God, it is a crowd, it's not a party, you know. Because we arrived quite soon to 2 million members. And this was a figure which remained for a very long time. But Togliatti made something else too. He realized that if he had given the party, which you could say new party, because he never had the time to operate to the courageous heroes who had been in prison for decades, or in exile, it would be a disaster, because they didn't know anything about Italy, what had happened these 20 years, how the young people were, and the whole story. And he made the courageous choice to go directly to the young people who had been fascists, because they couldn't be anything else, the new generations, you know. Of course, there were people underground, but they were of the other generation. And to give the party in the hands of the very young, and which is, you know, which had been educated by the fascist organization, and they had joined the left only at the moment of the resistance, which is 43, so very late in the last years, and they had joined the communist, the resistance was mainly made by the communists. And but of course it was a courageous choice, because you can understand that there were not everybody was happy of this. And if you imagine, I give you just an element, an episode, in one of the first secretariat of the party, there were three members who came from the film school in Italy, Cinecittà, which means at the time was a very prestigious and very important school, because it was the first school for filming which was ever made, not only in Italy, but was one of the first. And so the most intelligent young people who had received prize for all literary works and so on, had the privilege to be able to enter that school. So in one of the first secretariat of the party, we had three members who were all coming from the film school, Ingrao, Alicata, Lizzani. That gives you an idea that what an editor of Unità was, all the choices very of this time. So the party, and Togliatti made something very important, which is to try to speak to the fascist young people and to try to let them understand what is Heimat, you know, because they were full of a fascist idea of Heimat and so on, and to discuss with them. He wrote letters. I mean, it was a very important thing. And this is the reason why I experienced this in university afterwards, that in a couple of years, most of this, they came out and became members of the Communist Party. So it was a real change. So well, this is, I told you, Togliatti was saying that the Communist Party was a giraffe, because there were no other animals like this. But why? Because what was done, and what the reason of they became so many, no party, the French Communist Party was very strong, never had more than 400, I think, thousand. Because the party became in Italy something which didn't appear like something which was coming from abroad, you know, Marxism or Soviet Union and so on. There is a very beautiful sentence of Jean-Paul Sartre, which I used to describe what is the Communist Party in Italy. He was curious of the Italian Communist Party. He didn't love so much the French Communist Party. And he came very often in Italy. And at a certain moment, he said, finally, I understood then what is the Italian Communist Party. It is Italy. So what he wanted to mean, saying it is Italy, it meant that it's something which is coming out from the Italian people. It has the same, culture, the good sense, it was coming from the country. It was not like something Marxism or something which was coming from thing. And if you see, and you certainly hope that you have seen the Italian and the neorealistic cinema of after the war, you find the explanation of this. You find the poor sections of Rome where subs under proletariat, you say, subproletariat lived, and they, which somebody was a small thief, proletariat is, but they had all the heroes of the film had something of which they were very proud. They had the card of the Communist Party in their pocket, and they felt that this was their subjectivity, was this. They felt of those who were building the socialism in Italy. And even the comedies were all like this. Or if you look and read the books of Pasolini or many others, you find this description of the Italian people, and because they were communists. Also the problem of religion in Italy, the question of the Catholic Church is of course very heavy and very important because of the Vatican and so. But this, you know, was I tell you just a small story. I think I told Luisa many times that in 1946, the Bishop of Andria, who is a big place in the south of Italy, made a declaration in which they said that those who were members of the Communist Party were no longer allowed to become godparents of the baby, the children who made their confirmation. And the secretary of the section of the Communist Party of Andria didn't think about more than 15 minutes, and he organized a big march with the red flags on the fusil and the hammer and everything, and he marched over the cathedral, occupied the cathedral in order to apply that, to say that the communists should be allowed to become godfather in the confirmation. So this is a strange story, you know, if you see, but it was very typical of the fact that 80% of the Catholics were member of the members of the Communist Party, 80% were so. And that I tell you because there is one thing you see interesting in Italy at this moment. It's true that we have the fascist in government, but it's also true that there has been a wonderful, incredible shift to the left of the Catholic organizations. And all the Catholic, the demonstration we made in these last 2 years over the issue of peace, over issues, over the social issues, they have all been made together. And it's a beautiful thing to see the large square of San Piazza San Giovanni, which is the largest square of Rome where you make the big, big demonstrations. And you now have half flags red and the other half blue. And we make this together, everybody speaks. And this is a great achievement because, you know, it has been not so easy, naturally, when the church was very much right-wing, as it has been. Now we have a wonderful pope, so it's easier. But this has become already a shift of part of the population. Now I know that you will tell me, and why do you have the fascists? This is a good question. I give you back.
Okay. When we talked before discussion, the event now, you mentioned Gramsci as one, so to say, of the key elements of Italian communism and its relevance still today. In which way Gramsci, a theoretician of the 1930s, is relevant for today's Italian left?
Well, Gramsci has been very, very important, and we always spoke about the genome of Gramsci, that without Gramsci, all this could not have been possible. And one of the important qualities of Togliatti was that he committed himself very, very strongly in publishing all what Gramsci had written in prison, because Gramsci himself was in prison since the beginning of fascism, and he died in prison. And he had left a lot of papers because he wrote only in prison. And this, I think it has been important for two reasons, because Gramsci spoke and wrote something which I find very useful, especially today. And why I say today it is especially useful? Because we have a tremendous crisis, not of the left, but of democracy, although of the left, but the main crisis is a crisis of the democratic model, which is a representative and delegate democracy, and we vote for the parliament and so on. This was important at the time in which the political parties were important and really realized a link between the society and the institutions. If I think all what has been conquered in Italy, good, all reforms, have been made by the Communist Party outside the government. Being outside the government, only disasters arrived when the Communist Party, finally, not as Communist Party, but as the name they changed, they got into government. From that moment, nothing happened good happened anymore. But it has been all made outside, because from outside, the party were able to build the strengths to fight, to find out the alliances and all that, in order to conquer these reforms, which meant that, a delegate democracy, but a real delegation is not just you do what, this is so important today to see, well, if this doesn't exist anymore, everything, now what is the claims and so on, please parliament make this and this, and we support what you do in parliament. And the result of this is that 60% of the young people in Italy don't go to the polls. They don't vote because, in order to love politics, you must be conscious that it is you who are making things, that you are the subject of what has to be done. And not that you have just to make propaganda or what somebody else has proposed in parliament, you know, that you just have to say we want to apply what we have asked, a project of law made in parliament. This is not democracy. And democracy is strong. And this I am, how do you say, I'm thankful to the Communist Party, because the best and most important experience I made in it, it's exactly this, to discover how you build the subjectivity, you know, how you let the people, young people, feel that they are the subject, the actors of this, not that you ask somebody else who is in parliament. And if you don't do this, I am optimistic. Still now, I am optimistic because I see it working on the ground, you know, and not in parliament, that they are ready to get committed, you know, but they want to play a role themselves and not just be, you know, someone who is making a volantinaggio. I don't know how you can say that. You go around and you say, you know, let's have made what is decided in parliament and so on. And all this is result of a society who is no longer democratic, because the channels between the society and the institutions has been broken somehow. So why I say that today is important? One of the reasons why today is so difficult to understand what we should do and why this link, this commitment of the society has been weak, and it is the crisis of democracy comes also by the fact that we don't know exactly where the power lies. Where is the power? Is it in our parliaments? Not at all. Our parliaments doesn't decide practically nothing. And this is true with all the parties. They decide details, but the great choices are made on the level of the global market, where private, big, how to say, multinationals, they make agreement among themselves, and what they decide is always much more important than what is decided in the national parliament and in the European parliament as well. Take an example, I mean, quite recently, the Bayer bought Monsanto, and they are two of the most important financial groups who deal with something which is vital, because it's what we eat and what we is growing and so on. And they occupied now the 75% of the market. And how was made this deal? It was made to in the office of a private notaio, which is called notaio, the one who make, you know, the deals, notifications, you know, with private lawyers. It was completely private business. But this, what can decide, what can be decided by Bayer and Monsanto being together and controlling the 75 of the world economy, is by far more important. What discuss in the parliament? The rules of applications, you know, I mean, what they will do in order to apply the decisions which are taken. And why should people trust the parliament? That this crisis of democracy has, taken away this from there, you know? What do we decide? Small things, not so important. It's hard to say, but Meloni, our prime minister, fascist, she speaks with fascist words, and she has a branch of ministers who are idiots who speak as Mussolini would do, but, you know, that's just talks. But the policy she's making is not different from the politics which is made by everybody, left and right. Since a long time, it doesn't matter which party is in government in Europe, I think Europe is different, because more or less there is something which is decided somewhere else and which you cannot control and not decide. And this is why people should get interested in this, if we don't know where we have to hit, that we have a pile which is hidden in some way. And this is the result of what happened, I think. And one of the point of the crisis of the Communist Party, because you should ask me what happened of this party and when it started losing power, it started in 1970, in the 1970s, when there was a change, important change, of which that it was not understood, not by the Communist Party, by nobody, I would say, in Europe. 1970 happens, and I don't know if you remember, because very little has been spoken about that, what was called the trilateral, Tokyo. They met the three important pieces of the West, United States, Europe, and Japan, and they made a manifesto in which they said, in the last times, too much democracy has developed. 68 workers' struggle, which increased enormously all over Latin America, as Europe, and as everything, the student movements, which is not what they, which they said now, you know, in, they made a, celebrated the 50 years of 68, and it seems that they said the 68 was sex, rock, and drugs, you know, and you just revolt against an authoritarian father or a professor who was too rigid. The 68 was something else. The movement in Italy lasted many, many years and involved the workers of the factories, and all that story has been very important in building new important strengths and powers in the factory and so on. We arrived to the defeat. But so what they say, the doc, and then what we had the, all the countries of the third world who had been liberated, and they came to the political field, the political scene. You remember the non-allied movement, which played an important role finally on the international scene, and so on. And the document says, without shame, too much democracy has developed in the world, and the system cannot support it. We cannot bear it. Economic choices are too important to leave them to politics. And they find out, and they invented this word, which is governance, that we use. Even my organization, Archie, speaks about the governance of Archie. I get crazy when I see that, because governance is something completely different from government. Government is something which means something which is decided by the people and so on. And governance instead is technicians. Technicians should decide, not politics. So what it means is that all the economical policy is nothing else but the application of a neutral technician which has to be done. And in fact, this has happened, as you see, that the great quantity of the decisions which are taken by our government are decisions which present, I mean, the difference from one, you know, it's not so great, you know, because more or less they are always the same, which means that there is something which doesn't work with this. So this was the beginning, and we had the great counteroffensive of Reagan and Thatcher, as you remember, at the end of the 70s, the great defeat of the working movement in many places. In Italy, it was very glamorous because it was a fiat, and so what happened afterwards. And there was no consciousness that this was a great change, that the situation had changed and that something was happening. And at the same moment, what was coming out? What was coming out, that it was a crisis of capitalism, because capitalists found out that they could not go on with the famous social democrats compromise of the 30s, which was called the happy 30s. Because first of all, the process of model of industrialization and design didn't work. It stopped. It was clear that it could not expand all over the globe, and with all what it meant, and we can see it today even, that a problem of West and West is so clear here. And then because the ecological issue came out. The ecological issue is saying with clarity, we cannot the earth, this model can no longer work. We cannot continue to produce merchandise and merchandise because the land doesn't allow us to do, so we have to change this. All this issue of ecological issues is completely underestimated all over. It's a great problem. And although it's funny because especially Italy is a frail country because of the way it is made. Every week we have another sort of enormous disaster which arrives, in which everything is destroyed. Only to repair this, it takes millions every time. And the result of this is that this can no longer, the capitalist model of production can no longer go on. And this means what we do have to change. The capital has no longer the margins to allow the welfare state. And so either you change the model or you will have to do what? Where will we arrive? And this is a great problem. I give you two figures which I am impressed by. The figures is that all along the last century, due to the technological advance, the development, the traditional occupation employment has been reduced by 15%, very little. What is foreseen for this century, for the end of this century, is that 75 of the traditional occupation will disappear. So that what is the perspective to have 25 of the society which they are lower algorithm and with a very high qualified number of people will be able to have the power and do whatever is necessary, and then we will have a 75 population of of servants, no riders, which will bring the rich coffee in bed in the morning, probably, and Uber and so on, and then we will have a lot of badanti, we call them in Italy. I don't know how they are called, those who have to take care of grandfather who cannot be left alone, and so on. It's growing already. It's growing. You see. So what kind of society we will have? First of all, we should discuss the school, because at the rhythm of the technological change, even somebody who got a degree in 10 years, it will be old. So either the school becomes a permanent instruction and study at school all along the life, or they will be kicked out because their degree will be old in a very little time. This is the rhythm in which things are going. If it is true that we can no longer produce all these merchandises that we see every night at the TV, and I don't know, in Italy we every night, everyone who opens the TV is like if he was going up and down in a supermarket to see all the impossible merchandise who are totally useless. But if this is no longer possible because of ecological reasons, and we cannot do this, we have to change the model and make a model in which we would have services instead of merchandises. And but all of this, you know, who is going to decide it, who is going to make it. So the result I can say is either we make a revolution or we will be all dead. And I mean, before revolution was, you know, social democrats were quiet people and didn't want to make a revolution. And we communists were instead more nervous and we wanted to go faster and we wanted the revolution. Now, if the revolution is not made, it will be a disaster because of these consequences, because there is a crisis of capitalism. Nobody says crisis of capitalism, you know, because it makes everyone get frightened if you speak about the crisis of capitalism. My God, it's going to collapse, what's going to happen afterward? So how can we make a revolution? That is the point. We don't have a great idea of how the revolution made. Only one thing is sure, that it will be not like occupying the Winter Palace. If I go and occupy Palazzo Chigi, which is our Winter Palace, it will be empty or full with stupid people who don't decide anything. So we may occupy the Palazzo Chigi, put a flag on it, and nothing. So the point is, where is the power? What shall we do to do it? It's absolutely clear that the model of revolution, historical model, so the great importance of Gramsci, that was quite of agreement with Lenin, because you see, it was one funny thing, that Stato e Rivoluzione, the State and Revolution, is a book which has been considered the book of the most, as if it was a Stalinist book. That is absolutely the opposite, because what Lenin says is we have to recover the management of society, which has been expropriated by the state. So what shall we do is to recover this through practice, which will put in the hands of the people the management of the society. What the idea of Lenin was, you know, that this would happen, and I don't want to go too fast away, but it's clear that this is in any way not possible. So Gramsci wrote, and I think we should think about that, and I find more and more reasons to see that this is possible. What is, because the powers is no longer, we don't know where, what has to be think that the revolution is a long process, of course, and is a process in which in the West must be different also for one reason, because the state is everything in the East, in the backwards countries. In the West, the state is much less because there are a series, it's a complex network of powers, many more and more differentiated, it's much more complex, the structure of power in the West. So the point is not to occupy the state, is to see if we can, if in effect, try and start to manage. What does this mean? It means our trade unions, the CGL, has had the slogan in this last Congress, and this we are trying to work on it now, which is even the power of the working class in the factories no longer there, because there are no longer big factories with the working, important part of the working class, which was a traditional subject of the revolution. Today we have a much more fragmented society. Even those who work in a factory together, then you go and look at four workers, each one depends of a different firm, because it's a party, obviously, and so on. So you don't have the strength of the working class, it's absolutely clear. The delocalization, which is internal delocalization, it's called in Italy, that it's not that they go to Romania to make the production, it's also that they give the production to a lot of small firms, so it's a fragmented, even the power of the working class. So what can... what have we to do this? that we have to think that there can be powers which can be built. And I made you an example. We had a wonderful referendum in Italy against the privatization of water, which is an important thing. We won. After we won, everybody went home, those who had been fighting for the referendum, and the water in the time of 6 months was back in the hands of the privates, because, you know, okay, officially it is public, but then who is going to repair it, who is going to make the modernization? Well, and it, through these small decisions, it has been practically recovered by the private. What should we have done is that the same movement was fighting for a referendum, for something which had to be decided by the parliament, should stay and build something that Rosa Luxemburg called council, and Lenin called Soviet, but which means council, by the way, or, I mean, build some new form of local power, which will start controlling in order to prevent this process to go on and to make people aware of this and fight from the ground. And I know this is difficult, but it's the only thing which can be done. And I also see that that there are positive points in these things, that young people love this kind of politics because they are doing it themselves, not asking the government, please leave us the water privatized, public. And so that is the network which can be built. And I think we have to work on the idea. Gramsci used to call this power, he didn't call them council, but he called it casematte. Casematte means a stronghold, and which means a transformation of politics, of the society, in order to recover. Of course, you cannot recover everything, it's clear, but to have a network of powers in society, this is already very important. And we have to find, to start, what is it? Introduce forms of direct democracy within the framework of a democracy which will keep a representative, delegate democracy, parliament, election, so on, but this will not be everything. There will be what are forms of direct democracy which has to be reintroduced in the society, and that because of the fragmentation of a society, so it's absolutely necessary, indispensable, if you want to have still some sort of democracy, and that we have to work on this. And I know, so otherwise what happens? Happens that is our great enemy, you see, our real great enemy today is, I'm not afraid of Meloni, although of course she's, it's a horrible thing if in Italy there is somebody who's fascist, but I'm not so afraid. I am afraid of Tina. You know what Tina is? Tina is what is called in the Anglo-Saxon language, there is no alternative. This is what won, you know. People don't think that alternative is possible. And so what is the result? Me, I, perhaps alone, will be able to make it, you know. But we, collectively, we will not. So there is nothing to do. So I stay home. And this has to be beaten. And if we don't find the ways in which we help practicing the new things. You know, in Italy, we had an experience after the war, which was called sciopero al rovescio. This meant strike. The opposite of strike. What is the opposite of strike? They were workers over in the big landlords who had a lot of land, and they didn't work it, and it was left. So the workers, the land workers were without work. They started cultivating. They went with flags and so to in the land, and we started trying to make them produce and give work, you know. Instead in towns, like at Borgata in Roma, which is surrounding over the suburbs, there were no streets. There was no roads, there was no services. And what we did with the Communist Party at the time was to build them ourselves and to start building a power which was doing this. And when you do it, you have the power to impose it afterwards, you know. It's not that you are staying there and you ask, please make me a road. But you organize the people, that they become a collective, and so on. We are trying to now to make the energy community in a section of the town, in a number of houses. Why? Because to make it means we bring the people together. They have to be aware of what has to be done. They all work in order to make it possible. And this is building a power in a place. Then the society is no longer just a fragmented, but it makes something. So I think that this is what we should work, and we are trying to work. As I told you, the CGL started calling the trade union, the street trade union. What means the street trade union? That we have to bring together different social figures. Before, the trade union was the workers, no, that's it. And now you have a series of subjects who are alternative to this system. And you have the feminist groups, which is a strength. We have the young, the old, the students. We have a series of different subjects which cannot come together on immediate needs, because they are all alternative to the system, but in a different way, not because they have their immediate needs which are similar. They can come together only on the ground of a project, of a long project that has to be of change. We could understand what are their common interests. And this means that all the strategy has to be changed of the trade union and so on. So, as I told you, I'm sure that this and where we do it, we find the response. And also theoretically, you have to talk about the spring. I'm very positive, and so I finish with this. So crazy, yeah, optimist. Well, yes, I am optimist. I'm optimist. And it's, do you know somebody who's called Saito Kohei? Have you heard of him? Yes. This gave me real great hope. Saito Kohei, I read in The Guardian, just a chance, a long page, was telling about Saito Kohei. Saito Kohei is a Japanese teacher of the University of Tokyo who wrote a book who's called, had this horrible name, Capital in the Anthropocene, point for a communist degrow. And you would say, who will ever buy a book with such a title? And the book sold 500,000 copies only in Japan. And then they made a poll and they discovered that this 500,000 in Japan, which is an enormous figure, and were people, young people under 30, 35. And then I look around to see how I could find this book written in a different language, and finally, after a couple of weeks, I found it in the Cambridge University Press. And I bought the book, and after 2 weeks, I tried to have it again. No longer, it was just all sold. So I discovered also that I didn't realize, but this Saito Kohei, I knew him. We had invited him in the Pisa University, where we organized a conference on the actuality, how do you say, actuality, you say, of Marx. And Seito Kohei, we had invited him, but they knew him. I didn't realize that he could have this role. And instead, that's another very interesting story. And it is a great rediscover of Marx, but of a Marx of the late years. And this is a great result of the Mega, which you know is a printing house made in Germany, Eastern Germany, which is still which is founding more and more writings of Marx, written in the last years of his life, and which somehow he similar to those, this is what he wrote when he was instead very, very young, to the Grundrisse. And that around this, there is a whole network of young Marxists which are working on this. And it's very interesting also from a, on a cultural level that this really is a research which we have abandoned since how much we don't speak about Marx. I don't know. I sometimes wonder if our young people know who he is and who he was, you know. So I think that there is a research on which we have to work again, and that there is some chance that we can do it. And otherwise, I'm very, very afraid of what may happen to us. And okay, so let's say, but now I have succeeded in using again the word revolution and write it and to publish even in the publication of the trade unions. I made a mediation the last time. I said, can we say small revolution? I said, well, better a slow, small revolution than nothing, you know. And so I said, to legitimize, you know, the word, the idea that the word can be changed, that it's not true, that they cannot, I think it's a great help to kill Tina at least as possible.
So. Well, may I ask you another question? Something. Hmm? May I ask you another question?
Yes.
Something completely different. This wonderful book, Der seltsame Genosse Berlinguer, difficult to translate into English, you would say, the strange comrade Berlinguer, no, not really, possibly the peculiar, the extraordinary comrade Berlinguer. Who was he? I mean, reading this book, obviously, in his last years of his life, he was very strongly influenced by feminists, an interesting characteristic of a communist leader. And he was the last big leader of Italian socialism, leader of the party, influential politician, well respected in all layers of the society. You know him very well. Tell a little bit about him.
Well, yes, I'm glad you raised this issue because he played a very important role. Berlinguer was, I know him since ever, and because I have been in the youth of Federation of Communist Youth nearly until I was a grandmother, nearly, and because I was editing the newspaper, the weekly newspaper, and Berlinguer was secretary of the Youth Federation. Berlinguer is quite a strange person. He was a normal person until 1948. They shoot Togliatti, and he was nearly dead, and he was saved by chance, because it was a serious wound. And at that moment, the Communist Party realized that they should take, bodyguards, and Berlinguer was a member of the directory of the party, although he was very young. But, you know, to have bodyguard at 50 is one thing. To have it at 22, it means that it's spoiling your life, you know, because you cannot go on in the evening with whoever you want. It's difficult to have a girlfriend. I mean, a lot of problems. And this has made his character, it's a very rigid character, and you know, he didn't live with us. We went to for dinner in the evening, normal life. And this has, you know, heavy consequences on him. And so he remained very quiet and very, for a lot of time. And then again, for Longo, who's been a very important person in the Italian Communist Party, very little known, but a very important person. He became vice secretary, and then Longo got ill, and so he became secretary of the party. And he was normal, he didn't make anything significant. And then in 1970, when the party was at the top of its success, they had had in 76 years the highest degree of votes, which was 34%, which is very much. But of course, they couldn't, the Communist Party couldn't go in government because it was forbidden by the by Americans, let's say. And and what happened that in these years we had a series of coup d'etat, the Chilean coup d'etat, and so on. And the impression that Berlinguer had that we had arrived to a moment of crisis was dangerous and so on. And he chose these lines that we should absolutely make an agreement with the Christian Democratic Party, which is this funny party because we had, there was a left which was quite strong inside and so on. So to do what the Socialist Party had done 10 years before, and it was an absolute disaster, let's say. And I think that this line was wrong, because the Catholic world is not a democratic, Christian Democratic Party. There are two different things, and the relation with the Catholic world was one thing, but not with the Democratic Party. And Berlinguer himself arrived to this conclusion, because in 1979-80, we had a very, very big earthquake in Italy, and the whole worst corruption of the government and of the Christian Democratic came out clearly, and somehow it became the demonstrations that you couldn't have a government with them. What we had anyway was that several years in which the party, the Communist Party, was not part of the government but was supporting the party and the government. So that we find, I didn't speak about my manifesto. Well, at a certain moment, may I make a parenthesis on this, Josep. We wanted to, I make this backwards, I come back. We have been kicked out. I must say that Berlinguer made every possible effort not to let us go and choose to leave, to publish a magazine, what we wanted to do, in which we could be free to discuss. This is the only thing we wanted. None of us wanted to leave the party. We just wanted free discussion, of course, about the Soviet Union, but not only about the Soviet Union. Mainly it was on the line. And the main point, I just tell you the title and not else, because it will take too much time, but the mistake which the party made since the 60s and 70s was not to understand that Italy was no longer a backward country that should become normal like the other in Europe, but it was already, although great part of the South were remained backwards, but it was marked already by all the contradictions of the new capitalism, and this meant a completely change of strategy, and the strategy was trying to translate the idea of the revolution as a process in something which is not let's wait, but it was that claims were made such that they were incidered, they were changing the structure of the country, which meant mainly the control and the change of the way of production and the power of the workers and so on. It's too complicated to explain it here, etc. And this, the right of the party was instead afraid of this support to the struggle that in 1970 were very advanced and very strong, which took place. And the party did not understand that the new capitalism was on and that Italy was a different country since. Well, what happened that when this scandal came out so strong, Berlinguer, which is always a strange character, he met, he called the directory of the party to in Salerno, which was the place where Togliatti had arrived immediately after the war, the same town, because the earthquake had taken place in the near. And he made a very important declaration. He said it was wrong to make the compromesso storico, and we have to go back to the politics of alternative, and made a great change. The point is that he, on this line, he became a minority inside the party, who since Langholm had already taken a different position. They wanted to follow the same road as socialists and so on. And he went on his line, and he came out with number of decisions and declarations, very, very different. So he made a declaration on the question issue of ecology, which was quite new for a leader of a big party. And of course, he made a polemic towards consumism, merchandise, and so on. And then he was attacked as somebody who wanted to let people live in a very backward way. We didn't want the merchandises. We didn't want to have the nice life that was now good, coming from his own party. And he made a very important, very strong speech about the crisis of democracy. He was one of the first to denounce the crisis of democracy and of the political parties and the need of a great change and so on. He was attacked fiercely by his party and outside by the Socialist Party and so on. And of course, we found a new approach. A new friendship, I must say. About the Soviet Union, he finally made in 1980, so 10 years later than we did, a rupture with Moscow. But he did a very good, made it with a good sentence. He said, the propulsive, his positive shift, push of the Russian Revolution has come to an end. Well, his party, the PC leadership, made it totally afterwards, as soon as he died. The Russian Revolution, it was better that it didn't take place. The declaration of Berlinguer was different. It has ended to have a positive influence. But of course, he made this declaration 10 years too late. I think when we made this declaration, you had a world which was going on stronger, more left-wing, more force, and so the idea is this is not a real socialist. We want a near real socialist. In 1980, when the counteroffensive was on, the significance of this was different. Socialism is impossible, and this is the way it was taken, you know, socialism, and this is how we arrived to the end of the Communist Party. So we found, I tell you about our relation with Berlinguer because it lets you understand. We had entered the parliament, and we had a small group, but we were independent. And he came to us and proposed us to make lists inside. It was a funny story. Not independent in the list of the Communist Party, but as a party, as a party with our name and our program, to make an alliance in parliament together, and which we made. We had a wonderful success because finally lots of comrades who always wanted to vote for us but didn't want to not to give the vote to the Communist Party, could vote for us, but for the Communist Party at the same time. So we had a wonderful success all over, and it proved that, I mean, there was a discussion in the party. And finally, in 1984, when the clash within the party was serious, he came to our Congress and said, why don't you come back in the Communist Party? Because he was aware that his line found the opposition of the right, which had become stronger. And we say yes. And he died after a few months. And of course, re-entering the party would have had the meaning, because we were a small party, but we had a number of thousands of militants which were clever and everything, somehow changed, and without him it would have been impossible. So I had with Berlinguer, after having quarreled for a long time, we had a very, very friendly relation for quite a long time. I mean, it seemed to 4 or 6 years that he survived. And this is the reason why he became also so popular, because in somehow this was felt by the party. He was immediately, proposing and fighting to make very advanced referendum and strong and things, and which were immediately abandoned as soon as he died. And he was a strange person, very serious, the opposite of a populist leader. Mm-hmm. And I always remember at his funeral, a woman near me who said, he spoke in such a bad way that he could, it was clear that he was honest. It's a wonderful sentence. So because he was exactly the opposite of one speaking, you know, and so on and so on. And this is his image, you know, today. And this is the memory, it's a good memory. So we got back to the party, and after a few, 3 years, they decided to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. And to commit suicide, you know, the party had been weakened, but when they decided to close up the party, there was still 1,600,000 members, and 400,000 left without going anywhere, just because what the message which was given to them, everything we made, it was wrong. The revolution and everything. This was a message, and people felt if they had been broken their spine. And then the Fondazione was made. The Fondazione was made, which was a mixture of lots of different things. Ingrao, who was the leader of our wing, let's say, party, didn't want to leave the PD, who was made, not PDS, was made before and so on. And so we remained faithful to him for a couple of months, and it was clear that we couldn't stay in this party anymore, that the question was not a change of the name, but it was a change of position of everything. And so that is the story. So we went afterwards inside the Rifondazione, but was not a refondition, really. It was a moment in which there was a great success, but the Communist Party was no longer there. I mean, when I say the Communist Party was not there, I mean that it was an extremist wing of the New Left, which we always tried not to be, you know. I mean, the values, the position, the seriousness. I mean, that other stories. So Berlinguer is a very important figure today. I would say that his memory is very important, exactly because what happened immediately afterwards, he died. It was a very sad story. He spoke so bad, in such a bad way, that he was honest, but he was also courageous and intelligent in what he made.
I try another one.
His son is in...
Who is Lucio Magri?
Lucho was the leader of Manifesto together with Rossana, let's say that they were the two. And Lucho, I think it's been his readings important because he think he really made a description of Italian communism, which was the most clear which has been made, and also that he understood the change of capitalism in time. There is a very good series of reading of writings today still are the most precise about what was happening in capitalism, European capitalism. But and he committed suicide at the end of his life because he thought that there was nothing to do for 10, 20, 30 perhaps, and he said, I am 80 and I don't want to see this, what is going to happen in the 30 years. There is nothing to do, the time will come perhaps afterwards. So it was a very sad story. And so, you know. But now we find, you know what we do in Italy now? We made, I have to go back very fast, Saturday, because we make every year a seminar of all the old of the Federazione Giovanile, of the Youth Federation, those the generation which are much, everybody's much younger than me, of course I could be the grandmother of many of them, but I go there always, they invite me, I go. And then we make all the similar things with all the people of Manifesto Pdup. This is made always in a different town and so on. And the interesting thing is that we go there, nobody is member, practically nobody is member of the PD, and nobody asks the others, where are you now? For whom you vote? Nobody talks about that because it's not interesting. We stay together 2 days in order to discuss. We find ourselves a lot of points in common because we have somehow a similar story and similar culture. And but the interest for being a part of a political party is unexisting. And it's a sad story in a way, but also gives you the idea that, I mean, how that we have to start from the beginning again.
Well, I have the feeling that we reached a point where this is going to be exploitive. Meaning, if you don't mind, I would like to close the event, although it's only 8:30. But anyway, I think you did such an excellent job here explaining so many things about the Italian left, about Italian socialism, Italian communism, and I think we should not overstretch it. I would like now to thank you very, very much, Luciana. It's such a pleasure and such an honor that you are with us. You stay for tomorrow also. It would also be a very, very great honor that you will be with us tomorrow. To all the comrades who are here, I hope you enjoyed the evening. Who is interested in receiving further information about the educational program of KPÖ, please fill in the form. You will receive newsletters. And maybe it's to I reveal a secret. We are planning in foreseeable future a similar event with Michael Levy, who is, like Luciana, one of the icons of the left in Europe, a great Marxist, a great researcher. So thank you very much and give a great hand to Luciana. Thank you very much.